had a letter from Melva early in the week saying, has disaster struck the McLaren family yet? This morning I pottered over for my cup of coffee, half awake, and Mrs. Mulholland comes up and says, I've just been listening to your tape from 2 years ago, dear. Has disaster struck yet? I thought, you know, well, what's supposed to happen? I remember now, every time I've been here, something terrible has happened. Now I'm getting worried because nothing terrible has happened. I suppose there's time between now and tomorrow afternoon for something disastrous to happen. Of course, people then say, ah, yes, well, then, you know, the Lord really intends to bless. And then you think, oh, well, perhaps he doesn't intend to bless now. But, of course, that's not true. The great comfort is that he does want to bless us all. You and me and everyone else involved, the people in the kitchen, it doesn't matter who. He wants to bless us all this week. And I was just talking to Cynthia and to Mrs. Theobald, and I was thinking this morning, you know, sometimes you think of those speakers up there. I don't know what you think of them, don't tell me now. But you think of them being rather a race apart, rather special. They go over to their special dwellings there, you know, and they just appear and they drift up onto the platform and they drift and they're allowed to go away quietly instead of doing what everybody else is doing. And I sometimes wonder to myself, well, do you realise that they're not a race apart? Cynthia was saying she still has to cope with these butterflies in her tummy. They feel just the same as everyone else. It just happens that God has given some people different gifts, and to some he says, I'll give you a tongue to speak. That doesn't mean they can do it of their own bat. It only means that they have to rely on the Lord completely. And do you know the sense of dreadful unworthiness that comes over when you've got to get up and speak about the Lord, and you know your life hasn't been measuring up to some of the things you've got to say? Can you imagine? It's not an easy thing to do. So always pray for speakers, and remember they're as fallible as you, and often they're very much under attack because the devil does not want to hear the word of the Lord spoken. Now, I say that humbly and carefully, not dramatically, but just remember that, and remember to pray for speakers, because many people, you think they stand up there and they look so calm and confident. I assure you, they do anything to do away with the butterflies. But that's what keeps them dependent on the Lord, and it's only his spirit that can give us his message from his word. No human being could do it. Not at all. Let's pray, shall we? Father, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight right now and at all times. For Jesus' sake. Amen. Now, it was very wonderful how what Mrs. Theobald said this morning just paved the way perfectly for the thoughts the Lord's been giving me on Ruth chapter 2. Now, I have a different way of doing things. That's the fine. The Lord likes variety, and so does everyone else. And I've approached it rather differently. Now, she told us what Elimelech's name meant, the Lord my King. Now, Naomi's name meant pleasant. She must have been born into a very happy and delightful, God-fearing family. And then when this child came along, their cup was full, so they called her pleasant. And life continued to be pleasant for Naomi until that disastrous step that we've been told about, that they took all for the best, of course, all for the best, but in fact was a step in the wrong direction out of full trust in the Lord. Now Naomi came back, and as she came back, they said, here's Naomi. And she said, Naomi, pleasant. That's a joke. Just call me bitter, Mara. Because to her, everything at that time looked absolutely black. Now, Naomi knew, she knew from her own experience about the Lord's love and blessing. She'd experienced it from a child up. She knew about it by her own experience, not by somebody else telling her. She knew about it. She also knew about it because she'd surely been taught the scriptures and taught how God had loved and cared for his people how he brought them out of Egypt, how he kept them in the wilderness, how he brought them in under Joshua into the promised land. She knew, she'd been taught from a child, all about God's love and care. She knew about the wonderfully enlightened laws that God had made for his people. We find them in Leviticus and Deuteronomy. Laws that were way ahead of any of the countries round about. Laws that governed their nation for the good of all. Laws that showed God's care for his people as a whole and for each individual. Now she knew all those things, she'd experienced them. But when trouble, continuing trouble struck her, there was a sense of bitterness. And she said, I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. The Almighty has afflicted me. He's brought misfortune upon me. Now, does that sound familiar to you? I wonder, are there ever times when everything seems black? When you get up in the morning and you think, oh, not another day to get through, and something seems to be hanging over you, you try to pray, you try to talk the right way, and somebody says, hi, how are you? You say, oh, good. And then you turn your back and you think, that's not true. Is that familiar? And the thought which comes to your mind is, does God really care? Does God really care? Now be honest. Haven't there been times in all our lives when that thought has been in our minds, if not on our lips? In fact, I spoke a while ago on this subject to a group. I came into the luncheon and there were this group of ladies sitting there, chatting away, smiling happily. And I looked around and I said, Lord, you've given me the wrong message. Look at these happy folk. They don't feel bad about anything. But the Lord had given me the message, so I gave it. I've never had so many people come up because that message was not from me. I can tell you that. I waited 5:30 that morning and got it, so it was nothing to do with me. It was from the Lord. Those women came up and all of them, nearly all of them, were carrying a secret trouble, something that made them wonder at the back of their hearts, the back of their minds, if God really had things in control. Now, of course, when we get to be mature Christians or older Christians, by that I don't mean getting grey hairs, I mean we've been a Christian for many years, we don't normally say it out loud because everybody raises their eyebrows. You're supposed to go on safely. But whether you're a young Christian, you've not been a Christian long, perhaps you're more honest then, or if you're a young person. If you're an older Christian, you've been a Christian for a long time. Perhaps you don't even really know the Lord at all. But I think that the majority of people, whether they voiced it or not, have had this feeling. Does God really care? Now what brings this on? I was thinking about this, you know, and so often a sudden disaster or something terrific we have to deal with, that kind of rouses a sense of ability to cope with us and a dependence on the Lord, and we can manage through a time of tremendous concentrated stress and crisis. We may have a sort of relapse afterwards, but often we can cope with that. But the thing that I have found that really is something which brings on this sense of does God really care is a continuing thing, something that nags, perhaps a chronic illness, you know, nothing that you're dashed off to hospital and there's drama about it, or that you really look ill, but something that just goes on nagging week after week after week after week, and it saps your energy and everything begins to look bleak. Isn't that true? Often something like that, a trial like that. For Naomi, indeed, it was one thing after the other, but then she was left with this sense of helplessness. Sometimes it's problems, isn't it? That sort of thing. A continuing problem. Problem with a child. A child who grows up and who turns away from the Lord. What a continuing burden that is. And there are moments when you wonder, doesn't God care about my child while you're agonizing over it? Just something. Something like a husband being out of work, very relevant these days, unable to get a job. just a burden that goes on, nothing dramatic, but something within your family that makes a tremendous burden and tension and doesn't seem to be resolved. A besetting sin that you can't seem to get the better of, though you pray about it and pray about it. This can leave you feeling, oh Lord, do you really care about what happens to me? Inability to cope, as simple as that. Often I meet young mothers, you know, with a whole lot of young children at home, and suddenly it comes over them one day, the constant drain. Very often there's no grandma or auntie or uncle or anybody around to help them, and this constant drain, and suddenly they seem unable to cope. This sense can take away our joy and make us ask, does God really care about me? I'm so insignificant. Does he really care? Any prolonged stress, any real prolonged difficulty, something that's there all the time, I'm sure that can bring us to a point where we ask this question, as I believe Naomi did, and she questioned it. Does God really care? Should know the Almighty's brought misfortune upon me. Well, now, of course, she was right in one way, wasn't she? Because I'm sure that the Lord had indeed had to deal with her in that way and allowed misfortune to come so that Naomi would be led back into the way. Now, I want to make a point here. It's true that in Naomi's case, they had stayed in that land. She'd allowed her sons to sin against the Lord by marrying Moabite girls. Now, that was wrong. For some of us, it is sometimes the case that we've strayed from the Lord, isn't it? And then these troubles come. But it is also true for many that they are not, they've certainly not in any way consciously strayed from the Lord, not disobeyed his command, and yet the trouble comes. That can be almost harder to understand, can't it? But we only have to look into the Bible in Hebrews for the answer to that, don't we? The Lord tells us quite clearly that he chastens every child whom he receives. If we're a child of God, then we can be sure of one thing, that if chastening comes through no apparent reason, then that's a chastening for the Lord, and it's the only way he can teach us that, and he does it in love, and to us it's a proof that we really are his child. Now, I know this is one of the hardest things to accept and see. The question people always ask, isn't it? Why me? Why me? I had a friend at Bible college whose mother, Mrs. Ashton, Dr. Ashton, wrote a little book, A Mind at Rest. Have any of you read that? A wonderful little book about resting in the Lord. It was a tremendous blessing, and shortly afterwards, she had a breakdown. Now, all her friends gathered round and said, oh, well, look, you know, there must be some hidden sin. There must be some sin. Now, confess it and all will be right. As far as she knew, and she came before the Lord and sought him, there was no way in which she'd wantonly or in any other way strayed from the path of the Lord. And when ultimately the Lord healed her, she said, the Lord took me through that, so that I could rewrite my book knowing what it feels like to have a mind in turmoil. Now the Lord was able to give that woman, a great woman of God, that experience so she could speak more really to others. And many Christian people go through a difficult time. We heard from Robin this morning how she's able to get alongside other people who are wondering how to cope just because of what the Lord has let happen in their family. Now, I think we have to stress that because there is an awful tendency for people to look around and when they see trouble come on a Christian family, to say, oh, well, must be some hidden sin there. Now, as I say, in this case there was, but we mustn't assume that. Of course, when trouble comes to us, we've got to search our own hearts and lives, see if we've strayed from the Lord's will in any way, haven't we? Just as Naomi had to face up to the truth, and to deal with it. Well, having said all that, let's assume for the minute that trouble has come and we're beginning to look around for an answer. Like Naomi, we look around to find the answer to it. Now, I'm sure that at the back of Naomi's mind all the time, she knew what was wrong, and that's why she acted. And the first thing that we have to do to deal with this situation is to act, to do something about it, to get back to the place where we were. Now, it's what we say, well, it's easy enough. All Naomi had to do was to pack her bags and actually walk there. Now, often it's not a case that we have actually moved anywhere, is it? It's not that we've gone anywhere wrong, but in our attitudes, our gradual slipping away more often is the way that we get away from the Lord, isn't it? I find that, I know. I've said this often before. Our pastor, when he was about my age, of course, I was very young then, and I used to think of him as being extremely old, but he used to talk about the insidious sins of middle age, which always sounded very dire to me, but that's very real to me now, because there is this desire just to sort of settle down on your lees, you know, say, well, I've fought the good fight. Now, the Lord only says we have a right to say that right at the end. We can say we've fought the good fight, but there's the desire just to stop being in the forefront of the battle and to be active, just to settle back and retire, as it were. We were told this morning, you never do retire in the Lord's service, and that's true. But there comes this intense desire just to retire. That can be one way we can slip away from the Lord, just very gently, not by any acts of commission, not things, sins we do, but just by letting things slide. It's a very common way, and it's very possible, because we learn, the more we go on the Christian life, to use the right phrases, to put on the smiles at the right time, to sing the right songs. It's very possible to go on looking all right from the outside, but knowing in your heart that things are not as they were with your relationship to the Lord. I know, I speak from my experience, and I'm sure it's the experience of many others, that this is so possible. It may just be letting the cares of this world, as Jesus told us, choke the word. Oh, the little plant's still there. It hasn't died. The seed hasn't been taken away, but it's not bearing fruit as it should. Then we must come to the Lord and put ourselves at his disposal. Say, Lord, I've sinned. I've erred. Well, here I am, Lord. I want you to take me wholly. Now, of course, a lot of us expect when we do that the Lord will then come in a thunderclap and everything will suddenly change. That's how we like things to happen, kind of dramatic, don't we? But very often, there is nothing to see for the time being. I remember when I was in my 20s, after I'd been a Christian about 10 years, I backslid from the Lord. Now, it didn't take long to do the backsliding, I can tell you. But it was a long, hard way back afterwards. A long, hard way back. Because I expected everything to suddenly come right. But our first action, like Naomi, is to turn back and get back into the right place. What happened when Naomi got back to the right place? Didn't look much better, did it? They all turned round and said, she's changed. She looked around and knew her situation was totally different from when she was there before. But the first thing is to get back to where we were. Now, I think the second thing that strikes me here in chapter 2 is that we then get on with the work to hand. They arrived back there and we are told that it was the beginning of barley harvest. Now, indeed, this is a most significant thing. Then at the beginning of chapter 2, this superb author of this book, it's the most perfect little short story that was ever written, introduces us to the next important character on the scene. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. Now, having said that, and having introduced her character, she then continues. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain. Having come to the right place, the thing to do was to get on with what was to hand. They had no income, they had no means of livelihood, they had no man to care for them, they'd got to eat. Now, of course, those days, there was no social security. They couldn't just go around the corner and draw some social security. There was no government care, and there were no jobs for women. I think that's a thing we have to remember, how very desperate Naomi's plight was, how very desperate the plight of women in those days was if they had no man to care for them. Their only hope was to sell themselves as slaves, to beg, or to become a prostitute. Now, if they didn't fancy any of those, or starving, of course, it wasn't very easy, was it? It would require a great deal of faith in that situation, so that Ruth's job was then to go out as she was younger and stronger and gather food. Now, you know, this strikes me as a wonderful example of the sort of providence that God shows, and it highlights, and I'm sure that it highlighted for Naomi the fact that God does care. He'd made these wonderful rules for his people that always, when they harvested, we're particularly talking about barley and wheat harvest now, but any sort of harvest, when the wheat harvest, they were to leave and line round the outside of the field of standing corn. When it had been cut, you know, they'd go around with a sickle and cut it, then behind would come the people who gathered it into bundles and tied it into sheaves. If they found that they'd left a little bit behind, they weren't to go back and clear it up. All that was to be left for the poor and needy. There was none of this constantly sweeping up every little bit, grabbing all you could for yourself. God made those laws just so that people shouldn't starve or go in dire want in Israel. Just another example of his general care. There's a lovely hymn that I often think of that starts, "New every morning is the love our wakening and uprising prove." And this to me is the sort of thing that expresses God's general care of everyone. Just the fact that we wake up refreshed every morning. Just the fact that we have the hope of a new day. The fact that the sun has risen, the grass is green. The fact that we go on living, the fact that there's new hope. All these things are part of God's general care, that he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. That things continue to flower and grow. That we are able to work. That we have our faculties. And all these parts of general providence, even in our blackest moments, we should see as part of God's care. And I'm sure Naomi, coming back, just began the glimmerings in the back of her mind that here was some hope, some help for her. Now, the other thing was mentioned, in fact, that was a source of hope for her at this time when she came back to the Lord. And this, to me, is a very wonderful thing. And that fact was an immediate comforter. We're told that the Holy Spirit is our comforter and encourager, and indeed he is, isn't he? But sometimes it's very difficult to sense God being a comforter. We're human beings, aren't we? And we all long for human love and care and understanding. And that's natural. God knew that when he sent Christ. He sent Christ in human form to be our Redeemer, to be someone whom we could look at, whom we could know, the Bible tells us, was tempted in every way like we are. It's so tremendous, that, isn't it? That God sent Christ to be a human expression of himself. Now, often we desire that. And often God does just that thing. When we make that turn towards him, he'll send an immediate comforter. Now, I don't think this was immediately obvious either to Naomi. Just as Mrs. Theobald said, Ruth was sent to her as a wonderful comfort. There was Ruth's love, faith and hope. Tremendous thing. There was this person there, given to love and care for her, somebody to work for her, and yet Naomi didn't realise it at first. But how often the Lord does send us a person. Have you experienced that? In real need, the Lord will send along a person to speak to you, somebody who's perhaps had the same experience, somebody who can speak to your heart, who can be a comforter from the Lord. Not a sympathetic person, he said, but somebody who brings the Lord's word to you as it's really been ministered to them, and so that it can mean something to you. A friend of mine found she had cancer last year, at the beginning of last year, and she told me, she said, I've had a horror of having a breast off. She said, I don't know why, it's just been a thing I've had a horror of. And she was due to have a mastectomy. Not only that, they discovered that the cancer had gone into her chest wall. And so they said, well, the outlook isn't very bright. And her husband was tremendously affected. They're a fine Christian family, but they prayed about it, and she went and had cobalt treatment. And then eventually they operated and found that, in fact, things were much better already. But she'd come by that point to actually positively thank the Lord for what he'd done, because it drew their family together. Her husband had been extremely busy. Then he realised the need of the family for him. It drew their family together. It just gave them tremendous opportunities to witness. It was a terrific blessing to them as a family. And she said to me, oh no, she said, I don't regard it as a trial. It's just I thank the Lord daily for allowing me to have this experience. Now, while she was in hospital, there was a woman in the next bed who'd had several operations. She was a Christian but felt absolutely down, as we were saying, does God really care? And Phelan was able to open the scriptures and share with her the things that had happened. And through Phelan was ministered, first of all, to this woman, something of God's love and care, and she came to a renewed faith and was rejoicing by the time Phelan left hospital. Now, the Lord does that sometimes, doesn't he? I think very often he sends an individual along to be a minister of his love and care, and what I call an immediate comforter, because we are human and he knows our need. Now, I think the next thing that strikes me as I read this is the way that the Lord guided directly. Now, they didn't hear a voice. Nothing dramatic happened. Ruth just went out knowing nothing about the surroundings, out of the village. As was always the case, you know, the villages were tight and compact with houses crowded together, no gardens or anything like that. All the fields were outside the village, so she could go out of the village until she came to a place where harvesting was going on. Now, she knew nothing about it. It was a strange place to Ruth. She just had to go where she could find work to do. And it says, and she happened upon a field of boughs. Now, the interesting thing is, and I was really fascinated when I read this in a commentary, that word in the Hebrew doesn't mean it just happened to her, you know, she just landed up there, but it's always used in the sense of when somebody has actually been guided. Now, isn't that lovely? When we come back to the Lord, as Naomi had, nothing dramatic happened, but immediately he started working his purposes out anew. And he did this by guiding Ruth, though she wasn't aware of it. Has that ever happened to you? We've had a number of experiences in our family where we've been cast on the Lord for various things, and we've seen this happen, how the Lord guides. I can tell you one absolutely lovely thing that happened to me. It was a long time ago, but I always think how indeed, if we are waiting on the Lord and wanting his guidance, how he'll do this. I was working in the kitchen of a Bible college, and a friend of mine was there as a student, and I was upstairs praying, and I'd just got my pay packet, and it was my custom then, and sadly it's not my custom now, and perhaps it should continue to be. But when I got my pay packet, I knelt down and asked the Lord what he wanted me to do with it, apart from the immediate needs. And it was borne in upon me that my friend, who lived just down underneath me, was in need financially. So I pattered down the stairs and knocked on her door, and she rose from her knees and came towards me, and so I said, well, I said, you've been praying too. I said, I've been up there praying, and the Lord said, I've got to give this to you. And she burst into tears. She said, do you know what? I was down to my last halfpenny, literally. She said, and I was on my knees asking the Lord to send me some means of carrying on till my next amount of money comes. Now, I don't say that to glorify myself. I just say it to show you how when we do truly wait on the Lord and just go along with the thing that's to hand, how wonderfully he can guide. It happened to us when we were to go to New Guinea. We didn't know where we were to go. So we just sought the Lord, then we launched out in faith, and we found ourselves in a place which it turned out was couldn't have been better. If we tried to choose the perfect place for my husband to do his work, well, we couldn't have done better. And yet we'd known nothing about it. It had been the Lord who had led us. Only the Lord. It's wonderful, isn't it, how he'll do this. When you really put yourself in his hands, he'll just lead you into situations. You don't have any say in them. You're not active in them at all. But he guides you in this wonderful way in everyday things. And so it was, as Ruth and Naomi came back to that position within the will of the Lord, that the Lord began actively to guide, and Naomi, as Ruth, was sent to the field of Boaz. There are two things to say about Boaz here. One, that he was their kinsman redeemer. Now, I'm not going to go into this in great depth now. This was the Hebrew Goel, the kinsman redeemer. And also, of course, that he was a man of godliness and integrity. That comes out so much in the story. A man of a beautiful character. I'll talk a little bit about the kinsman redeemer because I think it's important here. This was another of God's wonderful provisions. As I said, all sorts of disasters could happen. There could be droughts, all your harvest could fail. Well then, what did you do? You had to have money to live. There was no way you could get money in other ways if you subsisted on your land, as so many of the Israelites did. So the only thing to do was to sell your land. Now the worst thing to an Israelite was to actually sell the land because it wasn't theirs. God had given it to them in trust. So in fact, they were selling God's land, so it was terrible to them to have to sell their land. The other alternative, and this often happens, and we find that throughout the Old Testament, they had to sell themselves or their children into slavery. And that was equally as dreadful, that an Israelite should be a slave. So God had made a provision for this. In the family, if this had happened, or if somebody became a widow and had no means of support, then the nearest relative, which was in fact the husband's brother, was the nearest relative, was to redeem that person. They stood in this relationship whereby they could buy them back out of slavery, out of need, out of bondage, and give them their position, their full position in the family again. Because it doesn't take me to tell you what a wonderful picture that is of Christ, our kinsman redeemer. So this person was provided. If the immediate relative, the nearest one, and there was an order of them, couldn't do it or wasn't willing to do it, then the next in order had to buy this person back or marry the widow and care for her and raise up children. Now wasn't that a wonderful provision that God made for the needs of his people? He knew their needs, he knew their situation, and this was the person to whose field Ruth was guided. And not only was he their kinsman redeemer, but a man much respected, a man of God, a gracious and gentlemanly person. She couldn't, if she'd tried, have chosen anyone more perfect for her situation. And what was Ruth's experience there? Well, we're told when Boaz came down to see how everyone was getting on, he asked his foreman about this person here. And the foreman said, well, she came early. This is Ruth the Moabitess, you know, the stranger who came here. And he keeps insisting on the fact that she was a stranger, that she asked if she might gather and glean here. And we said, yes, and she's been working hard there, hardly a break, doing everything she can. And the story is that Boaz then talked to Ruth, and he made, in every way possible, he tried to help her. He told her that she could have water that had been drawn by the men. It was thirsty work. Can you imagine, out in the sun there, no protection all day long in the heat of the sun, working in the harvest. Provided her with water. He provided her with his own food, prepared food that he gave to her, her own portion. He told her she could glean close to the people who were gathering up the sheaves. And he gave orders to his young men not to molest her. Now, we talked a bit about this morning. It could be dangerous for a young woman like Ruth to be out in the field like that, working along beside the men. But Boaz made sure that all this was taken care of, all her needs. And so she was able to gather a really good amount. She was properly cared for. She wasn't molested. She wasn't in danger in any way at all in her gathering. Come the evening, she had in her skirt, her bag, this large amount of corn that she'd threshed out of barley, and she also had something left over that she'd kept from Naomi out of the food that was given to her. And she came back home. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she'd gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she'd gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she'd eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Now, Naomi, seeing the amount she'd gathered, knew immediately that that could never have happened unless somebody had specially allowed Ruth to gather immediately behind. If she'd been pushed back with the other gleaners, then she couldn't possibly have collected this large amount of food. So Ruth told her mother-in-law, she said, "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz." Now I love this next verse because suddenly, a glimmer of light dawns at the end of the first chapter. We had Naomi saying, "Why call me pleasant? The Lord's afflicted me. Everything was black. Everything was black." At the end of the next day, seeing all this, suddenly, Naomi realized, "The Lord bless him," she says, first of all. "Well, that's wonderful. Praise the Lord," we'd say. And she said, "The Lord bless him, the man who's helped you." And then her immediate response was turning to Godward. "The Lord has not stopped showing kindness to the living and to the dead." How wonderful. She'd just not known what the next step was. So they got on with the work that was to hand, and the Lord led, clearly. Do you remember the lovely story of Abraham's servant? Abraham had been impressing upon his servant that he had to go and get a wife from his family's people, not from the local Canaanites. And so the servant prayed, and he prayed as he set off, and he prayed as he went along. Then it suddenly occurred to him, "Well, how am I to know who the right wife is?" So he prayed to the Lord. He said, "Well, Lord, I can only ask for a sign. Will you do this, please?" And he came to the well, and he said, "Well, Lord, the person who comes up and offers me and my camel's drink, let that be the right person." And you know the story, of course. The person did come up, Rebecca, who offered him and his camel's drink. And his testimony was, "I, being in the way, the Lord led me." Now, I think this is very much the case of Naomi and Ruth. Naomi had come back into the Lord's way, and she could say, "I, being in the way, the Lord led me." When we're in the Lord's way, the one thing we can be sure of is that he will guide and he will lead. We don't have to sit down and fuss about it. We can just trust him to do that. But we have to get on with what's to hand. I talked about coming back to the Lord. I met a young man who did some Christian training. It was full-time training. And while he was training, he asked the Lord to supply his fees. And Of course, he didn't have time to work then. He couldn't get any fees, and so he finished his training. I went off to lecture at a Bible college, and he came to visit me some time later, and we were talking about this and that. He was a lovely Christian fellow. So he said to me, "One thing distresses me," he said, "I still have some amount of fees outstanding. How come the Lord hasn't provided?" So I said to him, "How long have you been out of training?" "Oh," he said, "a month now." And I said, "What have you been doing?" "Oh," he said, "I've been praying for the Lord to supply." I said, "Well, you can just get up off your backside and go and do some work, can't you? Get a job and earn it. You see, we can't just go on." Ruth and Naomi came back, but they didn't just sit there and wait for the Lord to drop it from heaven. They got on with what was to hand. And of course, what happened, this young man went for a job. He found himself working for a Christian, and the Christian man just paid off his fees like that, and all the rest was provided for. But so many Christians think they've just got to sit there and pray and wait for things to drop into their lap. Now, the Lord doesn't work that way, does he? Yes, we turn back to the Lord, but then we get on with what's to hand, and I, being in the way, the Lord will lead me. People often say, "Well, you can't steer a ship if it's not moving." Well, I know that very well. Actually, we have a place on the Colo River, the Upper Colo, and our children go canoeing there. And I try to point out to them that a canoe has to be moving before you can steer it. And they soon find this out. They're going against the current, and they find they can't steer it, so they stop the paddles. And, of course, the next thing that happens, actually, is you don't stop and turn around, and you start going back downstream. Now, that is a perfect example to me of the Christian life. Unless we keep going on, unless we keep doing what's to hand and trusting in the Lord, well, there's no steerage. The Lord can't lead us if we're not moving. If you stand at the crossroads, you won't get anywhere. You've got to move. Don't worry, the Lord will tell you which way to go. You know that lovely verse in Isaiah? I often think of that when I'm really stymied. I think, well, I've got to try some way. And it says, "You will hear a voice behind you saying, 'This is the way. Walk in it,' if you turn to the right hand or to the left." Now, the Lord has said he'll do that. I didn't say it. He's told us that if we keep going and we turn the wrong way somehow, then he'll tell us. He'll tell us it's wrong, and he'll tell us which way we have to go. A very recent experience of my husband and mine was that we thought the Lord wanted us to leave our present place and go and live out on this place on the Colo River and start a study, a Christian study centre there. Now, this was an enormous undertaking. Our children are still young and we're getting ancient. And, you know, it was a big thing. But we felt that the Lord really wanted us to go there. Then enormous pressure came upon him to apply for promotion in his job. He said, "I don't want it, you know, we want to go out there." But this pressure continued, so I said, "Well, let's just take it to the Lord." So we prayed. We said, "Lord, if we're meant to move, then may he not get the job. If we aren't meant to move, may he get the job." It was as simple as that. Now, humanly speaking, it didn't look likely that he'd get the job. There was somebody else who we felt sure would get it. But he applied for it, and being in the way, the Lord led us. He got it. He was voted on unanimously. So we know the Lord wants us there. Now, if we just sat still and worried about it and prayed, well, we wouldn't be anywhere. We wouldn't know. Sometimes you have to make a move, and then the Lord can show you. When you're going, you can be steered. When you're sitting still, well, there's no hope of being steered. So we have to just go on with what's to hand. We've got to be a bit practical. Yes, of course, we have to pray, but our movement has to be in trust to the Lord. It's the same so often in the Christian life. There's a balance, isn't there? And I come back to what I was talking about at the beginning, in this matter of being a speaker or doing anything like that. Now, if I sat there and just prayed to the Lord and never got up to speak or never put anything on paper or never did anything about it, well, nothing would be achieved.
Would you please turn the tape over at this point?
Now, if I sat there and just prayed to the Lord and never got up to speak or never put anything on paper or never did anything about it, well, nothing would be achieved. But I have to prepare, but in complete dependence on the Lord. Doesn't mean I don't trust him. I just trust him to give the words, and I trust him to speak and to deal with things. I can do no more than that, and none of us can in our lives We just go ahead, trusting him and knowing that he said that he will guide and lead. And that wonderful word that if we turn off the way, if we're truly wanting his will, then we will hear that voice saying, "This is the way, walk ye in it." And when Naomi came back, and when they got on with the work to hand, then the Lord was leading, and then Naomi saw that glimmer of light, the darkness lifted. God does care. The Lord has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. And then she added, "That man is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Just an inkling of how God was going to work was shown to her. She hadn't any idea at first how he was going to work, but she was just given an inkling there, and light began to dawn, and again she looked up and praised God. Now I pray for all of us, myself and you included, that if in fact we are at this present time suffering from a sense of wondering if God really does care, that we shall be enabled over this weekend to come back to a position where we're ready for the Lord to work, and then in complete trust in him, to stand still and let him show us the way we should go. That sounds, now I've just been talking about, should keep going. You know what I mean? We've got to rest in the Lord, but get on with the work to hand, and then see the Lord acting on our behalf and leading us as we submit ourselves joyfully to his will.